This feature will allow your voice to be heard on your favorite PRN show.
Thank you for listening to the Progressive Radio Network.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Don't you know we're gonna
burn,
have
burn too many things we found. That's the divine Dara Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, a Solartopia song brought to you here on PRN at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show, our weekly excursion into the benign future of green power, green thinking, and green doing. I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, and we're going to devote today's show to what I consider to be the single most important piece of our public policy in the United States today, because it's the most tangible, and that is the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant, which is continuing to operate about 9 miles west of San Luis Obispo, California, on the Pacific Ocean. And these two reactors are very old. They're very dangerous. And God forbid something should happen to them. The entire country will be bathed in radiation. God forbid. These two reactors are sited, surrounded by a dozen, count them, a dozen earthquake faults. And they're 45 miles from the San Andreas, which is half the distance that Fukushima was from the epicenter of the earthquake that destroyed it, leading to four nuclear explosions, three meltdowns, and the poisoning of the Pacific Ocean. So today, I have good news, which is that we do have a possible angle to bring Diablo Canyon to the two reactors, or at least one of them, to where they deserve to be, which is shut down, for various intricate legal, financial, and technical issues. I'm going to give it to you up front real quick, and then I have three great experts on with us. John Geisman, one of the leading lawyers in California, and certainly a leading lawyer in the whole multi-decade Diablo Canyon fight. John, are you with us?
I am.
Good, good. And you're talking to us from the East Bay of the San Francisco Bay. You're on the east side. You're in Oakland or Berkeley?
Actually, today I'm at home in Bodega Bay. I can look out
oh my God.
The bay and see the site of PG&E's first planned nuclear reactor.
Yes, well, good choice for you. Okay. We also have Linda Seeley from San Luis Obispo. Linda, are you with us? Ah, we're missing Linda Seeley. Okay, and then we have Donna Gilmore. Donna,
yes, I'm here. Hi, Harvey.
Donna is down. We're actually spanning California from north to south. If you're up in the north, John Geisman, Linda, who will join us soon, I'm sure, is in San Luis Obispo, and Donna, you're down between L.A. and San Diego. So let's start now. I'm going to do a brief overview, and then I'm going to turn over to John, and then hopefully Linda will have joined us, and then Donna. Pacific Gas and Electric, which was once the biggest utility in the world, has not handled its empire very well. In 2010, they caused an explosion that burned a good chunk of the town of San Bruno and killed eight people. And my understanding is they're under criminal murder indictment for that. This case hasn't been settled, and there's a long way to go on it. And there's many other things, I'm sure, John Geisman, you can tell us, but most recently and most importantly in 2017 and in 2018, PG&E did not appropriately maintain their power lines in Northern California, and they basically are being held responsible for much of the horrendous, horrific human and ecological damage done in those fires in Northern California. And it has now become pretty public that PG&E is very, very likely to go bankrupt. And I'll be asking John Geisman to discuss how that might offer avenues of leverage for the public to really do what needs to be done at Diablo Canyon. Three of the things that need to be done are these. Number one, we are reasonably certain that after 30 years of intense heat, pressure, and radiation, the core of at least Unit 1 and possibly Unit 2 as well is highly likely to be embrittled. Now, embrittlement means that if, God forbid, there's an accident and water is poured in, the metal that contains the reactor core could shatter because it has lost its resiliency and cannot withstand the intense shift of temperature, like a glass or glass with hot tea, or if you pour hot coffee into a cold glass, it will shatter. Same thing with embrittlement. And we want, there are ways to test the embrittlement at Diablo Canyon that are reasonably cheap and simple. And in February, this coming month, Diablo Unit 1 will shut for refueling. It usually takes about 40 days. And there's no reason while the reactor is shut that they could not test for embrittlement. I'll leave it there for the moment. There's a lot more to talk about with it, but that's what we got. Secondly, there are X-ray devices that can go into the core that can see if the core is cracked. And again, high likelihood. And we want that done during the shutdown, the refueling. And finally, and I'm sure there's more, but Donna Gilmore will talk to us about the waste situation at Diablo Canyon and the indications of how waste is being managed and what the state could say about the waste at Diablo Canyon, because it looks pretty seriously mismanaged, as we know is happening at San Onofre, the two reactors that have shut between LA and San Diego. So those are the three key parts of it, of the technical side. So I want to turn now to John Geisman. John, your stellar work over the decades has really made a huge difference at Diablo Canyon. And now the Pacific Gas and Electric is headed into bankruptcy at a time when its Unit 1 will be shut down for refueling. Are there any avenues that the state and the people of California can find to force PG&E to look at these three issues before they reopen Unit 1 after its refueling?
Well, I think the announcement that they intend to file for bankruptcy is pretty universally regarded as increasing the likelihood that in order to come out of bankruptcy, some form of state government assistance is going to be required, whether that be a change in existing law or an acquisition of particular resources or assets or an outright bailout. The role of the state is going to be quite a bit larger than would be the case were they not filing for bankruptcy. And I think that raises a number of possibilities about what demands the state may make to condition its assistance. You've got a situation where PG&E logically in bankruptcy will be attempting to conserve as much cash as possible to minimize its own expenditures. And that creates a very alarming circumstance for a nuclear power plant operator. You'd like them to be spending all that was necessary in order to operate the facility safely, do ongoing repairs and maintenance, and try and keep it in the best condition possible. bankruptcy pushes the company in just exactly the opposite direction, no matter what public assurances they may give. And frankly, right now, PG&E's public assurances about safety on any subject are not given a lot of credibility.
Well, that's pretty amazing because, you know, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars here. And PG&E, it seems to me, and John, you'll have a better technical grasp on this than I was, than I do, although I'm sure, Linda Seeley, have you joined us? She's missing this call. We'll cover it. Donna, you're here with us. It seems to me, and you being the attorney and certainly a great expert in public utilities law, that the bankruptcy is inevitable. Am I right about that? I mean, it does not appear to me, as a layman, that PG&E has any road out other than bankruptcy. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, I agree with that. But until they actually file, there is uncertainty. And one of the large hedge funds that's a major shareholder today released a letter, Blue Mountain Capital, I believe is their name. Today they released a letter to the PG&E Board of Directors accusing the board of violating their fiduciary duty to shareholders by announcing the filing. In the view of Blue Mountain, PG&E is by no means insolvent, and they don't. The Blue Mountain letter suggests that they're not entitled to go into bankruptcy.
Wow. Well, that strikes me as somewhat surreal, given the fact that PG&E is being charged with murder. They're being sued for billions of dollars for burning down Northern California. And what's their financial state, John Giesman?
Well, the argument that Blue Mountain makes is they're not insolvent yet. They don't have to pay out any of those judgments. Assuming judgments are ever rendered against them, they're not likely to have to actually write checks for several years. So in Blue Mountain's view, and again, this is a hedge fund. It's made a speculative investment. It's trying its best to salvage that investment. Blue Mountain's argument is that PG&E's filing is premature by at least several years. And remember, in bankruptcy, the equity holders generally get wiped out. So this is the opening stages of what's likely to be a very bloody knife fight between different interests.
Man, it's mind-boggling. Where will the state's role be in adjudicating these kinds of disputes?
I'm sorry, Harvey, I couldn't hear you.
What will the state's role be, the state of California, the governor, the assembly, the Public Utilities Commission, the various other commissions that are involved with the operations and solvency of PG&E, what will their role be?
Well, under the bankruptcy code, state regulation of a utility is generally respected by the bankruptcy court. So the state retains its regulatory authority over PG&E. It will have to determine what level, if any, of rate relief to provide PG&E during the time that the bankruptcy is pending. And then I would strongly suspect that in order to successfully come out of Chapter 11, the state will have to make some legal changes, whether that changes the liability for what's called inverse condemnation in California is an open question. Whether it entails authorizing so-called securitization of PG&E's liabilities and billing them directly to ratepayers is an open question. The legislature took a step in that direction last year. And then finally, whether it involves the outright purchase of any assets. It's been mentioned widely that the state could potentially buy the PG&E hydroelectric system. That's something that would require legislation. In the meantime, the state's been very clear about expecting PG&E to step up its inspections of its transmission and distribution lines in the interest of fire safety and to radically upgrade its vegetation management practices to keep trees from falling into lines, which appears to have been the cause of the fires the last couple of years. So the state's got a very big role, but how it chooses to play that remains one of the big uncertainties in the bankruptcy process.
That's amazing. It's really amazing how deep this goes. Let's turn to Linda Seeley. Linda, you and Don, of course, are quite familiar with John's great work over the decades here. And you're in San Luis Obispo. People must be freaking out about the prospect of PG&E going bankrupt.
Yeah. listening to John, it sounds even worse than I thought.
or better, depending on your point of view.
Or better. I mean, it's more catastrophic, I would say, for our future. I'm involved in the, I'm on the decommissioning panel. It's working sort of in a guidance function.
Linda, are you still there?
Hi. What?
Yeah, I couldn't hear you. You got to speak up. Can we hear you okay, Linda? Can you hear me? Can you hear Linda and Donna and John?
I can't hear Linda. Linda, are you on mute?
Yeah, I can't hear Linda either.
No, you might have hit the mute. If you can hear me, call back on another line, please. So let's move to Donna Gilmore as we wait for Linda. The thesis here that we want to test is the idea that let's posit the three most obvious issues at Diablo Canyon that would make or break it in terms of continued operations. These are technical issues. The question, and I'm sure that everyone on the line can think of more, but the ones that popped to my mind, number one, is the reactor pressure vessel, is the core embrittled? And two, is the core cracked? Now, both of those can be tested very easily and very cheaply during the outage. And we all know, of course, that PG&E is not going to want to do those tests, and that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission will not force them to do it. And so if Linda jumps back on here, I'll take those two up with her. Linda, are you with us?
Hi. Yeah, sorry. Something happened to my phone.
All right. Did you hear what I just said?
No, my phone was out.
All right. So I'll repeat it real quickly.
Okay.
There are three major issues, the third one being waste, and we'll talk to Donna about that in a minute. But there are at least two major technical challenges that Diablo Unit 1 faces, should face, coming out of refueling, which generally takes 40 days and begins sometime in February. Okay, number one is the reactor core embrittled? Is the pressure vessel, are the welds compromised? And number two, is the core cracked? Now, both of these can be tested fairly easily. And you can explain it, Linda, if you would. And the question is, given what John has laid out here in terms of their fiscal and political situation, can we imagine and engineer a situation where the state would make its legal and financial cooperation with PG&E dependent on their doing these two tests.
Well,
Linda, what do you
I
think?
I would hope so. If I were a state regulator, I sure would, because we on the reactor vessel of Unit 1, it was already judged in 2003 by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It's one of the five most brittle reactors in use in the United States. And so I won't go into the details, except that it hasn't
Linda, you're breaking up on us. John and Donna, could you hear us? Can you hear Linda?
No, I can't clearly hear
no,
what you're
I
saying.
No, she was breaking up.
We've lost. I guess Donna, Linda's got a bad phone right now. So let's proceed with this. And I think you know enough about it, John. Let me move on to the third issue that strikes me, and maybe you've got more, Donna Gilmore, is the question of waste management at Diablo. Now, there have already been reports of significant problems at Diablo Canyon in terms of waste management. And of course, we've seen the nightmare of what's happening at San Onofre. So can you tell us about what's going on with the waste at Diablo and how this might be impacted?
Okay, the nuclear waste at Diablo is being stored in containers that are only half-inch thick when the international standard is 10 to almost 20 inches thick. And Holtec is the company that manufactures them, and they also did the loading for PG&E, loading the canisters. And they actually loaded over half the canisters incorrectly. And the NRC just gave a pass to this. These are canisters.
Donna, wait. But before you run away from that, can you describe what incorrectly means?
Well, in this case, they were supposed to put the hotter the fuel assemblies in the center and the cooler ones on the outer basket cells inside. And that allows convection cooling, as you go from hot to cold. They did it the opposite. You know, it was more like they're cooking a pig. You know, they have the hot fuel rods, the fuel assemblies on the outer part of the circle. You know, the circle. It's a circular container, and the cooler ones inside. So that what you've done is you risk overheating and damaging the fuel. And the canisters are welded shut. Each one contains roughly the equivalent of a Chernobyl nuclear disaster. They're welded shut. They have no way to know what's going on inside once they're shut. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission just gives them a pass. People need to understand that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is not protecting our safety. They're another regulatory agency that's basically doing whatever the industry wants for industry profits. So we're going to have to make up the difference for that. And now, what would be
Linda, let me ask you a question here. Are there clear regulations that are being violated by these procedures at the Diablo Canyon?
The NRC has regulations that say the containers must be able to be inspected and taken out of service if there's problems. But the NRC has been given the authority to make an exemption to every single one of their regulations. So they're basically ignoring their only safety regulations and giving them a pass. And the fuel is supposed to be retrievable. And even the president of Holtec that makes, he says, even if you could find cracks in these canisters, you can't repair them. So, and these are, you know, over $1 million a piece just for the canister, not even labor or the other parts of it. So
how many are we talking about at the
Oh gosh, you know, I don't remember the exact count of that they have at Diablo right now. I think it was around 30, but I'd have to double check my numbers. I haven't kept up with the latest. But when they decommission, which they plan to do in a few years, you're talking about all the basically all the fuel that's ever been burned in that reactor is there now, and they're going to want to put them in these inferior containers. My hope was that if the state's going to negotiate with PG&E, they could use some leverage to insist on containers that are proven and thick wall containers that can be monitored and maintained and meet all the laws and regulations, safety regulations, as a leverage point to cutting any kind of deal. I don't know, Geisman, if that would be feasible or not, but normally the NRC...
Let me lay this out. Let's say, and John, you're the guy to answer this. Let's say that people like Donna, and let's say we put together an expert panel and took the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's own regulations, which they're waiving here, right, Donna? That's you said that basically.
Right. They're basically out, yeah.
Okay. So let's lay out the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's own regulations and all the findings of all the experts who really know what to do with these canisters, and put together a memo and present it to the state, being the governor and the assembly and the CPUC and whoever else you think might be relevant here, and tell them, here it is. You need to hold a hearing, and no matter what the NRC says, Pacific Gas and Electric should not be allowed to reopen Unit 1 without meeting these specifications. What would happen, John Geisman, if we did something like that?
Well, you're mixing a couple of different legal attributes that probably would be separated. Got the license to operate the facility itself, which is what most of your comments have been directed to. Donna's comments relate to the license to operate the independent spent fuel storage installation. It's a different license and is not necessarily directly tied to the operation of the plant. In both instances, the Atomic Energy Act provides a pretty strict federal preemption of all questions of radionuclide safety. So the state's angle and leverage has generally been in the economic area. You can make economic arguments about the selection of tasks. The state's got a recognized interest in having its utilities use casks that over their life cycle could be expected to cost the least amount possible, as opposed to casks that may have to be reopened and have the waste inside repackaged multiple times. As it relates to the operation of the reactor itself and coming out of this refueling, I think it's really more a function of the state not telling PG&E directly what to do, but making very clear that it will, in all likelihood in the future, condition any financial assistance on PG&E taking a much more vigorous approach to questions like testing for embrittlement than it appears to have done in the past. The state's going to have to hang its hat on economic regulation of utility because it preempts it under federal law from directly addressing nuclear safety.
Okay, but what we're, excuse me, what I'm, let's just say I'm proposing here is that the state basically say, look, this company has burned down Northern California, killed 8 people in San Bruno. Clearly, they're not capable of running these 2 nuclear plants or the 2 reactors. And we, because we are now the funder of choice here, and the PG&E cannot move ahead without our say-so, we are preempting the regulation that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, well, we're preempting the responsibility of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which it does not want to take. All right, so I can hear all the people howling, all the utility guys and all the corporate guys howling that this is not appropriate for the state to do. But it's our money. I mean, all three of us.
Well, we have total, Harvey, well, we have 100% jurisdiction on the financial. The state does. The NRC finance is not their jurisdiction at all. The NRC doesn't care which container the state chooses to buy as long as it's approved by their regulations as it meets their safety requirement, which they all approve about anything. But so economically, we have the economic influence and power because, you know, it's our money. So there is no conflict there as long as we're advocating for a container that meets NRC requirements. There doesn't seem to be a legal conflict to me at all. Yeah, right. So I think we're on solid ground if we can get, you know, our governor to understand the issue and be willing to negotiate this this change.
Well, let me ask the lawyer a question that I don't know the answer to. John Giesman, with your long experience, can you imagine yourself in front of the governor or the PUC or the assembly making the argument that because the state of California is putting this money into PG&E to keep it solvent, that we should require them to do these casts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty straightforward.
Well, whoop-de-doo. I think now, so let me ask you this. Of these, am I naming the three parties who are most responsible here correctly? Is it the governor, the legislature, and the CPUC that will be at the center of this bailout?
Yeah, I think, Harvey, if you remember back 18 years ago, the last time PG&E went bankrupt, and the state was trying to figure out some way in which to bail them out to prevent the bankruptcy. The great San Francisco politician and at the time state Senate majority leader, John Burton, laid it out real clear. I give you a dollar, you give me a hot dog. He wasn't going to give him a dollar without getting something back in return. I would suspect that the equally great San Francisco politician and now governor probably has the same kind of philosophy when it comes to putting money up to help PG&E. Of course you expect something back in return. I think the question is, how quickly can you come to that conclusion? And this is exceptionally early in the Newsom administration. They're just getting their feet on the ground. They're making appointments now. I don't know who it is that you would talk to about energy-related matters until they've made some appointments.
Well, these are safety-related matters, really, all three of these issues.
But they're also economic.
Yeah, but, you know, in a large enterprise like state government, there's a huge org chart, and you've got to have somebody to direct the request to. And right now, I think that's probably an empty box on the org chart.
Well,
that would be the California Energy Commission, which sets nuclear policy unless they reorganize that function.
It set nuclear policy under the last administration. The governor needs to designate somebody as his liaison with the NRC. That previously was the chairman of the California Energy Commission, but I think as the new governor, Governor Newsom's going to have to figure out whether he wants that relationship to continue or not.
So
it would be a utility. You have the Public Utility Commission that approves issuing funds and that type of thing. So there's that relationship. also.
Yeah, and he's got vacancies at both commissions that he needs to fill.
Well, but we do have, the clock is ticking here because the plant goes down in February. We have 40 days starting whatever day in February they start the refueling. And that is the moment that this has to be done. This has to be done when the plant is down, as I think we all know from previous experience. So, John Geisman, let's posit a situation here, which, frankly, I would like to make happen, where we go, and I'll, Linda, have you come back? Linda Seeley? I guess she had technical problems with her phone. So, let's posit these three issues. And let's say somebody like, you know, me or whoever else makes an organized, well-documented case that for all sane human beings on this planet, Diablo Canyon Unit 1 should not reopen unless it can show that it's not embrittled, that the core is not cracked, and that the nuclear waste can be handled. Now, let's presume that some people have drawn up a memo to that effect. Who would you take it to first?
I would presume the governor's chief of staff.
That person is?
It's a lady, but her name escapes me.
Okay.
Been in the newspaper a couple of times. She's ostensibly been
involved. It's Anna Leary. Anna Leary?
Yes, yes, yes.
Or the governor personally himself, right? I guess we'd have to go through his chief of staff, but we want to. So are you saying we don't start with the CPUC, we don't start with the assembly, we start with the governor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as they say, you're on. So let's talk. Well, now, does the governor have the power to do this? Can the governor go to the utility? Let's say the governor agrees with this on all three of these issues, and I'm sure that you can come up with more. Donna and John and, you know, Rochelle and everybody who knows this plant knows there's more than those three issues. But let's take those as the top three. What can the governor then legally, politically, financially turn to the utility and say, you either do this or you don't get a cent? Can he do that?
On the waste, I think they could on the waste because you can make I've made a financial argument already to the PUC about San Onofre dry storage, but they made it out of scope to the proceeding, but that was at the discretion of really the governor with the chairman. But I made a cost-based case on the waste, and the Judge Bushy even said my case was meritorious but out of scope. So, yeah. That,
what does that mean, out of scope?
Case,
what do you mean out of scope?
An economic case can be made on the waste.
Yeah, the ALJ just didn't want to listen to it. I was in that case as well.
Who is the ALJ? The administrative law judge.
She's no longer at the Public Utilities Commission.
Well, yeah, it's a new Public Utilities Commission. So,
right.
But we've jumped from the governor to the PUC. If we were to make this case on the waste,
I think you want to go where the power is, Harvey.
Okay.
It's the governor, and he doesn't have to make an explicit threat. He can simply call the new interim CEO at PG&E and said, listen, I'm really concerned about this, and I want you to do this. Ultimately, you're going to want me to do something for you. I'm asking you to do something for me right now.
Well, that's just the first ask. I mean, we started at the tail end here with the casks. So let's go to the front end. So, let's summarize that. So you're saying, If somebody brilliant like Donna Gilmore does up an in-depth memo and we take it to the governor and he buys in, he can reasonably call PG&E and say, you do this, please, or else we'll cut your head off. But, you know, this is – and that is a credible route to take. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't think that's a stretch at all.
Donna, what do you think?
I don't think you ever get to the point.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I mean, in the last administration, it was really all up to the governor. The power is in the governor's office for all of this. You know, he appoints the Coastal Commission, giving the permit for the dry storage, the State Land Commission does the environmental report, the PUC doles out the money. Yeah, and one more important thing to know when we're talking about the reactor side, there are all kinds of critical systems in these aging reactors. They have no way to inspect to know if they're holding up. You're talking about an aging reactor that the parts were only designed to last so long, and they aren't even lasting as long as they thought they would. And you have critical parts of the system that can't even be inspected, and no one has any idea how they're holding up. They just had a three-day conference at the NRC with the industry on all the things they can't inspect. 3 days.
So when the show is over, Donna, you'll begin work on that memo so that we can have the laundry list of other stuff. And I'm assuming that the waste is at the top of that list. But you know, that would be another thing I assume we can take to the governor, right? The laundry list of other stuff that they can't account for.
I think we have to have some more conversations about details and approach on this. So definitely,
okay,
need
John.
To do that.
John,
my reaction, Harvey, would be your odds of success are larger the shorter your list is. So when you say laundry,
well, we could do an appendix.
That's probably
we could have a main list
something
and an ancillary list.
If you're wanting something quickly, I think you need to prioritize to what's doable now and what's urgently needed now.
Okay, then John, let me put this one to you. I've mentioned it before, and we've talked about it. Let's make it clear: embrittlement is a known beast in the nuclear industry. It was, in fact, the reason that Yankee Row, when it was hit by lightning, and there's a story to that. I don't have time to tell it, but in 1991, Yankee Row in western Massachusetts was hit by lightning, and it went down. And it happened to be that at that time, the new chairman was coming into the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Ivan Selin. And the anti-nuclear people got Peter Kostmeyer, who had a committee in Congress, I think it was the Environmental Committee in the House, to hold a hearing where we raised the issue of embrittlement at Yankee Row. And I actually sat next to Ivan Selin and gave the anti-nuclear position that unless this thing is tested, you should not allow Yankee Row to reopen. And Peter Kostmeyer looked at Ivan Selin and said, well, what about that? And Selin, who had really no chance, no other choice, said, yes, I agree. And then they found out they couldn't do the test. They didn't have the equipment to do the test, and they never reopened. Now, at Unit 1, there are coupons, that's what they're called, I guess, little strips of metal, as best I understand, somehow embedded in the welds or the core. And Linda is the expert on this, but we'll get her on another time. And the testing for embrittlement at Diablo Canyon, when the reactor is shut for refueling, is a piece of cake.
Yes.
I've seen estimates of $250,000. And there is absolutely no excuse in anybody's mind, any sane person's mind, to continue to run a reactor that's embrittled. So that would be at the top of my list to take to Governor Gavin Newsom and say, Governor, we have a list here of certain things, and at the top of the list, they can do this test, $250,000. It's a known test. And would you be willing to please tell the utility that it will be the state's decision? Now, this is critical here. This test cannot be conducted by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. There is a company, apparently, or a number of companies that do this testing. The state should independently, as far as I'm concerned, hire one of those companies to do this test, and they report to the state, and the results are made public, and there needs to be a hearing on these results. Is that something that you think that Gavin Newsom would go along with?
you know, I can't speak for Gavin Newsom. I guess I'd turn the question around. What's the argument against doing that?
Well, you know, I'm sure we'll hear all of them.
Why hasn't PG&E already planned to do
it? Well, it's not necessary. It's a waste of time. It's the business of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The state has no business getting involved in safety regulations or in technical specs.
Well, except that the coupons were built into the design for exactly this purpose. So
right, but the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has said they don't have to do it. So the governor of the state of California would essentially be preempting the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. That's going to be the argument. Is
this
governor willing to do that?
Preempted word, and I guess I would suggest just keeping it to a phone call. I think PG&E is
if we made a public campaign on it.
On a reasonable request.
What do you mean by keeping it to a phone call, John?
Pick up the phone, call the new CEO, say, this is what I want you to do. I'm having problems getting confidence in your leadership. Reassure me. Prove that you've actually got the commitment to public health and safety that all of your public statements the last 90 days have insisted you do. This would be an important confidence-building exercise.
Donna, what's your take on that?
Well, two things. One, they probably don't want to do it because they know what it's going to show. And number two, there is no seismic rating for a container that's embrittled. Even partially embrittled, even if they can operate it without it failing, they only do seismic rating, assuming everything's been maintained. So when people talk about what rating it can handle, it doesn't have one. So it really shouldn't even be running is the bottom line. But that's a harder a get, I guess.
Well, is there a scale? A numeric scale of embrittlement below which the NRC will not allow a reactor to operate?
Oh, I would say when it melts down.
Oh, that's reassuring. So we don't know.
I wish I was kidding.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So we don't have a scale of 1 to 10 of embrittlement where we can say, well, Diablo 1 is 6, and you can't operate under 7. There's no scale like that. Is that correct?
There may be. I don't know what that scale is.
All right. Okay. Then
need to be a material engineer and probably something that could be looked up to see what what that limit is. A lot of this should just be basic science, but with the NRC. They make exemptions to even basic American manufacturing standards, so it's hard to know without doing research on that.
So the presumption from a political standpoint is that we would want the state to say, okay, we're going to hire the company that's going to do the test, we are going to make the results public, and we are going to decide whether the reactor is too embrittled to continue to operate. I mean, that's the ideal solution. As far as I can see, John, is that at all feasible in the world of California politics today?
I'd settle for half a loaf there. I don't think the state needs to declare in advance that they're going to decide whether the reactor can be operated or not. Just do the test. Give me the numbers. Let's make it public.
Well, but the point is, though, that the numbers will come up. I mean, we want hearings, obviously. And then everybody's going to be jumping up and down about who's going to make the decision and what standard we're going to hold them to.
Yeah,
embrittlement,
once you get that out in the public, the direction ends up being pretty clear.
Well, to us, to people who are sane, but, we're talking about a company that burned down Northern California here. The final one that I know I can think of that I think is a big league question is whether the core is cracked.
And I'll bet a dime to a dollar it is, but and there is technology to test it. They can X-ray the core. It's not a particularly difficult thing to do, to my understanding. Donna, are you familiar with the technology there?
I haven't researched the nitty gritty on there. When I heard that they can't even inspect the safety systems, I kind of figured there shouldn't be any of those reactors running. I want to say one other thing that I think is a real simple thing. American Manufacturing Standards, ASME, they have something called an N3 stamp, saying that your container meets pressure vessel standards. These dry storage containers are pressure vessels, but yet they have no pressure relief valves and no pressure monitoring, so they can explode from overpressurizing. So a very, very simple request would be to say, will PG&E, will you only buy containers that meet American Manufacturing Standards that have an N3 stamp for these pressure vessels? Something very simple. I mean, even your pressure cooker has that. Just that one thing would change the way they store the waste at Diablo Canyon. They wouldn't be able to use these inferior thin canisters. One simple thing like that. Even the oil and gas industry can't get away with having pressure vessels with no pressure relief valves.
Yeah, okay, so there's another. John, go ahead. John Giesman?
Yes.
Yeah. So
I didn't hear the question.
A scenario where what Donna has just laid out is presented to the state in a way that they would turn around and take it seriously and make it actionable?
As long as it's framed on economic grounds, yes. But as I said before, the waste issue is separate from the operation of the reactor. And I think you're Harvey, you're mixing the two. They're on somewhat different time frames for urgency. And in both instances, the state is preempted from anything that directly relates to nuclear safety. It's got jurisdiction over economics, but as soon as it starts trying to influence the safety operations, it's preempted by the federal government.
Well, so except that the federal government is
stay
not
on the right
them
side
the money
of that
to,
line.
Except that the feds are not giving them the money to deal with their bankruptcy problem.
Right, which gets back to, I give you a dollar, you give me a hot dog.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got four hot dogs here, you know. They do obviously get roasted in the safety grill here, but they're still part of what we want. I mean, the bigger economic issue is these reactors blowing up and, you know, wiping out all of California. That'll cost a few bucks here and there. And we've already had four explosions at Fukushima and one at Chernobyl and a close call at Three Mile Island, not to mention all the Soviet stuff. So, you know, there is an economic backdrop to all of this. We are protecting the property of the state of California. I realize that's seems like a step removed, but in my mind, you know, since I do own a house in L.A., I see my economic interests on the line here. Am I too far-fetched here, John? I mean, are we going too far into the weeds, or weed, as it were?
Yeah, I guess if you're asking the governor of the state of California to do something, he doesn't need to get in a fight with the NRC in order to do what it is you're asking him to do. And I guess that's the point that I would emphasize. He's got his own independent reasons for wanting PG&E to establish that it can operate in a different manner than it has been operating in the past. So he's making this request, and he's making it to a new guy. Guy's only been the CEO for what, 4 days now?
Well, that maybe works to our benefit.
Well,
I know what's going to happen soon is that Pete Seeger is going to come on and our hour will end. But as you can see, this is about as serious as it gets. And you two have been absolutely fabulous, Donna Gilmore and John Giesman. Do you want to tell people how to get a hold of you?
I don't want anybody to get a hold of me, Harvey.
Okay.
San Onofre Safety.org. We've got similar issues. Actually, we've got terrible issues with the whole tech system down in Southern California. But the website is San Onofre Safety.org, and it covers more than just San Onofre. Reached through that website.
And let me give my clients website. It's the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, A4NR.org.
All right, well, as you can tell, I'm pretty serious about this. I think that this may be our last window, this outage, to shut Diablo before 2024 and 2025, i.e. before the San Andreas goes off and turns it to radioactive rubble. And so
Harvey, I want to mention Mothers for Peace, which is in San Onofre, which is in San Luis Obispo, and fighting the Diablo Canyon issues.
I'm sorry, Linda Seeley's phone didn't work. We'll have her back on. She's been on with us before. I give us a good chance of keeping San Onofre down, of keeping Diablo Canyon down. And I think if Unit 1 doesn't reopen, I think Unit 2 might go down as well. And so I am, 100% all in on this. And you two have been great to talk with about it. I am doing an op-ed, which I'll send to you both and to a few other people to review. All right, you guys, thank you so much.
Thanks, Harvey.
Diablo Canyon.
Always
thank
a pleasure.
Very much. John Giesman and Donna Gilmore. And we'll talk to you again. I'd love to see you next week. Talk to you.
The sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.